You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I come from a family that celebrates birthdays all month long and then again on your half birthday. But it may be your birthday today, for real, and if it is, happy birthday to you. But regardless of the day, we are all so glad that you were born. And our guest today is going to share with us about indigenous ways of birth. And we are so honored that she's with us today to help us do that. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Hi, my name is Clista Cole. I'm Inuit and Yupik. I currently work with Perinatal Support Washington as a parent resilience specialist in the PERC program, or the Perinatal Education Resilience Collaborative. I'm also a mother of six.
I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you have a great deal of wisdom and knowledge from several sources. I mean, I know that you have some tremendous knowledge just by raising your children and being a mother. And you have training and you work with those of us who are becoming mothers or are mothers. And so how did you become interested in doing this kind of birth work?
It just kind of happened. I just kind of traveled on my journey into it. I did not see myself working with birthing people. It was actually from a very traumatic event in my life that allowed me to walk into this path of just wanting to be surrounded by other Indigenous women. And there was a training coming up within just a few months after this tragic experience in my life, where it was a full spectrum Indigenous doula training, and it was at a very sacred place to me and many Indigenous people in my community called Daybreak Star. And so I took the opportunity to take this training, and it was so much more than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kept moving forward in this work. I'm also from that training, I began to take a childbirth educator course, which I'm currently in. It's a 10-month course, I believe. Or no,
wow.
Maybe it's a year-long course. I can't remember. but I've done so much. I'm like, it's just become a natural, just so natural to me. And then I, through community members who have known me, I was informed of this job at Perinatal Support Washington with the new program that they were starting, which is peer support for those experiencing PMADS, or perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. And so I took that opportunity and I got the job. So,
oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're very deserving. And I love to see these good things happening to you, because I know that you are a person who will take what you learn and share it with all of us in the community. What is the most, well, let's just back up a little bit, you know. Tell us what a doula is and does. Let's start there.
A doula is someone who, from my perspective, from the training, I learned so much. But what it is basically someone who supports the birthing person and is there to provide just additional support and advocacy where we can't, you know, like when I've been a birthing person in the hospital, I've, you know, had experiences. I also, you know, want to say that because of my upbringing, I didn't think that I was allowed a doula, you know, because of my income. And it wasn't offered in my community at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful to see that there is like a new program for specifically for Indigenous doulas. And so it's giving that additional support and advocacy work for women who I feel, you know, when we give birth and we're in those positions, we're vulnerable and we can't always speak up for ourselves and we can't always navigate what we want because we've got this medical these medical terms and this life that's going to come out one way or another. So
right.
You know, we're vulnerable, and so that's, you know, doulas are that additional support and person that can help us advocate for our needs in a time of being vulnerable.
Thank you for that definition. I love that. And in our traditions around the world, Indigenous people, doesn't it seem as if we always had someone to do that for us? The aunties, the grannies, the midwives, the elders. Didn't we usually have someone who loved us and cared about us and helped us through the birthing process?
Oh, most definitely. It's our traditional ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's our traditional ways that have, you know, been taken from us, I believe, for many of us. We've been, you know, stripped of that right, of natural, you know, natural community.
I think that's very important to keep in mind, is that, you know, this was the way we would have given birth for centuries, with community, with help and support. And now, you know, our mainstream medicine approach is a little bit different. So, what happens to the birthing person, the person that's giving birth, when they have that kind of support?
It, you know, from my perspective, not having that support, I believe that for those, even though I'm not a practicing doula, but I'm, I guess, kind of my job description is pretty much along those same lines of adding that support mm-hmm. and advocacy to those experiences. I feel like it gives us a better quality of life if I'm not being too forward.
Yeah.
It helps us to feel lifted and that these things that we're experiencing in our pregnancies and are after, you know, after we give birth, that these things are normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's okay to feel down and transition through those hormonal changes and shifting from being one person to now caring for a whole new life that
mm-hmm.
has to grow and develop and become an individual person themselves. I think it helps us to be better parents if we have that community support.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us that right that we should have to have our villages around us.
I appreciate you saying that because I think that community is quality of life, right? We've all heard of failure to thrive babies that don't have enough attention and love and comfort and attachment. Literally, it comes out in their physical bodies. And I think a lot of folks who are removed from community and connection, it shows up in all kinds of other ways. And so, of course, at this incredibly tender and precious and important time in a person's life, giving birth, pregnancy, postpartum, all of that, community and connection are healing medicine, aren't they?
Oh, most definitely. I would say 110% they are. It's, you know, it's important to have that community. You know, there's also, you know, some downsides of, you know, our birthing stories is, you know, we do have pregnancy loss and we do have, you know, infant loss. And, you know, I've worked with parents that have experienced those things. And I think that one of the most important things that we can do as a community is surround these parenting people in their losses as well. To know that they're supported in community, that they're not alone in this. That, you know, even though I've had a pregnancy loss myself, mm-hmm. and I've also lost, you know, an adult child.
Mm-hmm.
And to just have that community support surrounding mm-hmm. you, saying, "We love you," you know, and mm-hmm. not putting forth that, "Well, I experienced this too," but saying, "I know that this is painful for you. I know
yes.
that this hurts,"
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
and individualizing that pain as well. It helps with, you know, quality of life, especially when that person is already parenting children. It's all connected, you know, it's all connected in that quality of life. And if we have support in the good times and the not so good times, the up times, the down times, then we can be better parents, which is important when we're raising members to grow and be in community themselves. And it just creates this beautiful circle of life.
I'm sorry for your losses. And to anyone listening to us today who's had losses, we're sorry. And we pray that you'll find comfort. And we are sorry. I appreciate you saying that, because I think that the difference between hope and despair is community. That when you have a community, even the most tragic and difficult events, you can see some light at the end of the tunnel or some hope for your life if you have the right community around you to support you. And without that, you know, despair seeps in, hopelessness seeps in. So I'm sure that you have seen some of the statistics about women of color and birth. And, you know, I not too long ago became a first-time mama myself, and I made sure not to read those. But since then, I'm like, what? and I'm really, I'm hoping that you can shed some light maybe on what we can do to make birth, which is a totally natural thing, right? I mean, you know, and yet it seems as if it's so dangerous for women of color right now. Are there things that we can do to make it safer and to have better maternal outcomes?
I've seen the statistics. It's a lot of information. We're doing trainings and learning about things, and it's a shock. It is, but it's also not. It's like, I know. I also want to say congratulations on becoming a first-time mom.
Thank you.
You're welcome to the journey. I honestly am constantly trying to figure out what can we do, what more can we do. I know that the medical care that we receive has got to get better. The racial bias and racism in medical centers needs to get better. We need to be able to have our voice in our care. We need to be able to say that this is what I want without feeling forced or obligated to do what the doctors want. We need to be better informed. We need more information and not just, well, this is what's going to happen, and you know, you're going to just have to do it. My daughter, my second child, she's 16 now. I was going to the doctors, and they told me, well, your HCG levels aren't rising high enough, so you're probably going to have a miscarriage. And that was it. That's all I got. I didn't there was no, you know, okay, so this is what we can do to help this. Here's some, you know, this is a list of natural foods that you can eat to maybe help. Here's a community support that you can turn to help you through this in case there is a loss. And it was, I was left alone in that. And then I was 4 months pregnant, and I felt her move for the first time, and I just grew so happy. I'm like, oh, she's making it, you know, because this whole time I'm worried that she was not going to make it, and that, you know, I feel like that introduced stress into my body that didn't need to be there, because there was not a support system or a way of saying, okay, well, let's help you have a successful pregnancy if this is what's, you know, what we see. There was nothing like that. And I think that that's important, you know, that I feel like that's a way that we can help have more successful, you know, birthing experiences, by having that knowledge and that information, especially in our communities of women of color and our traditional ways, is we need to be able to have those resources in our communities without doctors saying, well, you know, this is what it's going to be, and, you know, sending you on your way.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Your candor is just precious to us, that you are willing to share with us, because this is happening a lot, right? I mean, I have a friend who had a miscarriage, and the doctor came down the hall and said, oh, no baby here? Okay, just a D&C and let her go, and kept walking. And she just, you know, she called me, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, what are we doing here to people? Have we forgotten, you know, the humanity of it, the compassion of it? And I told her how much I loved her, and I said, that means nothing. What he said means nothing. When you come home, there'll be ceremony for you. There'll be aunties waiting for you. That's just something that happened today, but we're not going to let that be the final say. And even what you're saying about there were things that could be done, or there was another outcome, you know, we've got to have advocates. We've got to have people who aren't afraid to speak up. You know, I've become an evangelist for hormone testing, because I had quite a journey, you know, before having our baby. And it turned out that all that it was that I make lots and lots and lots of estrogen, lots of it. So I'll never age, I'll never grow old, you know. But I make almost no progesterone, which you need to keep from miscarrying. And so a simple $25 vial was the difference between motherhood and no motherhood for me. But nobody ever thought to check. Nobody ever thought to, you know, such a simple thing. And yet no one ever thought, you know, they were looking for big problems and this and that, but there weren't any, and it was something so little. And so now, you know, I'm in everybody's ear. Did they check your hormones? You know, have they checked all your hormones?
But that's right, that's definitely.
And that's the kind of wisdom we need in community. Someone always knows something that you don't know. And that's where community comes in. That's where advocacy comes in. And that's why I love the work that you're doing. And I certainly would want you to be there to stick up for me, you know, during the birthing process, to speak up for me. And I wonder if you have any insight into how we all can be better support. You know, we have these gender reveals, right? And we have baby showers, and everybody's like, yay, baby, this is great, this is great. And then we give a gift and go away as a culture, as a mainstream culture. But what can we all do as a community to support expectant mothers, new mothers, postpartum mothers?
Check on them. if you know someone is expecting, I mean, even if they're having a hard time or not, check on them. If you're in the grocery store, give them a call and say, hey, I'm at the grocery store. Do you need anything? Are you craving anything? You know, because oftentimes we have these cravings and we're not sure what to do. You know, I've been in all my pregnancies, I was without a car and I was without support. And this is a part of, you know, the work that I do is peer support, is where I share my story to help others. And, you know, from my experience, I want to hopefully, you know, get into community what we can do better. You know, and acknowledge that what I went through, other pregnant people are going through as well. They don't have vehicle, they don't have access to, you know, people. And so if we know our mommies are at home, you know, and they, we know they don't have a vehicle, or even if they do, call, do you need anything? You know, and sometimes they'll say, no, thank you, but thank you for checking on me. And that's going to make a huge difference. If they really, if they don't need anything, it's still going to make a difference because they know somebody cares. And that's going to help with those happy hormones. You know, it's going to help, you know, I mean, it's going to help them feel those happy hormones, which are going to go into that baby, and that baby's going to feel those happy hormones, and it's going to produce a happy baby. Because when mommy's happy, baby's happy. You know, they say when mom's happy, all the, everybody in the house is happy. And that's the truth.
That's
is that we've, you know, and it's not that big. You know, we have, I've, in my work, I have, I am working with a mom who lost her, her 4-month-old sister. And
I'm sorry.
Holding her, you know, and I met with her and I said, what do you need from your community? And I said, it doesn't matter what it is. You tell us what you need and we will find a way to figure it out. And if we can't, we will let you know. But we need to know what you need, not what we think you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also so important. And I wanted to take her out. You know, get her a cup of coffee, just sit with her, you know, give her space.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned that to someone, and it hurt my heart because someone in the community said, oh, she has no problem getting out of the house.
Mm.
And one of the big problems was is that it doesn't matter if they don't have a problem getting out of the house. We need to identify that when we are pregnant, mm-hmm. when we are new moms, when we are experiencing loss, we are not our individual selves.
That's right.
We're different. We're going through things. We're overwhelmed. And as mothers, we carry the weight of responsibility of making sure the household is good. And we oftentimes need somebody to just hold space with us for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, to answer your question in a long way, just check on them.
Yeah.
Check on our pregnant people, our new parents, our parents who are experiencing loss, because that's going to make a huge difference. And a lot of the times we don't do things because we just assume there's somebody else that will do it.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't have those assumptions. Okay. It's who we want to be. Do we want to be that person that gives back to our community and helps heal our community? In our Indigenous community and in our communities of color, we have so much trauma from our generations and our intergenerational trauma, and a part of healing that is giving back to our community in the smallest ways. That's going to heal parts of that pain that we carry in our DNA, where we once had our traditional ways taken from us. We couldn't speak our language. We couldn't dance our dance. We couldn't have our ceremonies. We couldn't gather around our birthing people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we bring back some of that, some of those traditions, is by doing these small things. For me, those moments of checking on each other, that is ceremony.
Yes, dear.
That's a way we are gathering and saying, hey, I see you, and I know that you're not doing well. You're probably tired. You've been nursing all night. Do you need anything? Even if it's, you know, and I want our pregnant people and our new parents to say, to accept that help also, because I know how hard it is to say, no, I got it. But say, yes. You can grab me some raspberries and come hold the baby for an hour.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have to be able to also acknowledge our needs as well.
Ah, well, I'm so glad you said that, because I needed to hear that. And you're right. I think because we're trained, especially, there's a myth. And I don't know exactly where it came from, but the myth of the strong woman. You know, of course we're strong just by being women. But the myth of she never says a word, she dries her tears and holds her head up, you know, right? I mean, what? No. I mean, if you need some help, that has nothing to do with whether you're strong or not. That just is because you need some help, right?
Right.
You know,
from my perspective, it means that your spirit is calling for that ceremony that we need.
Yes. That's beautiful. That's beautiful, because I think then we forget that giving is a mercy too. It's ceremony too. I mean, part of our culture was the giveaway, the ceremonies where we give. And this is a chance, you know, for us to give as well as receive. That is ceremony. That's a blessing. And it's humility, one of our other virtues. Humility, the first step of humility is to ask or to receive. And then generosity, that's one of our cultural values. When we're not giving, we're not receiving, we're not in balance. And so, you know, a friend of mine called me. She said something about, I'm going to bring you a bucket of chicken. And I said, I already have a bucket of chicken. So-and-so brought it by. And she said, well, you can have two buckets of chicken, can't you? And that just changed my whole thinking. Exactly. Yeah.
The other day, I called my nephew. I was in the grocery store. I was in his area. And I said, hey, and he's not a birthing person by any means, but... You know, he's a young member of our community, and I said, you know, you need anything? And he said, well, yeah, we could use milk. No, he said, yeah, we need stuff, but that's okay. And I'm like, no, what do you need? I'm in the grocery store. I'm in your area. And he gave me this small list. And so I was around the grocery store, and I'm like, okay, these are youngins. They're, you know, you're young adults. And I'm like, let me grab a couple extra things. And so I grabbed him a couple extra things, and I showed up, and they were so appreciative of, of the gift, you know. But that's what we do, you know. If one thing we can do is get food and give a hug and say, I see you. I know that, you know, you're in need of just some personal perspective a little bit, I guess.
As we come out of a pandemic, which is still going on, right? You know, everyone has had a lot of disconnect. You know, people have had losses of loved ones. They've been social distanced or isolated. Maybe the powwows have been canceled. Just, you know, people have had a lot of disconnect from their community. And some of the folks who have had that disconnect are the people who need it the most. Pregnant, nursing, postpartum moms. You know, gave birth and then immediately were sent into quarantine and solitude and lockdown, and, you know, all of the spaces for support and community were suddenly taken away. What would you say to someone right now who just hasn't been able to have the same level of community and connection during the birthing process or the postpartum process?
What would I say? I can only imagine how difficult that was to go through that. And I know that we each have our stories, and some of them are not always glamorous and wonderful experiences. But I want you to know that, well, yes, you're not alone, and that there are others experiencing it. That's your individual story, that's your individual experience, and I want you to honor that and acknowledge how difficult that was for you to go through that experience. And if there is someone in your life, in your community, that maybe you haven't been able to reach out to them, and make a connection, or make a phone call to a family member Mm-hmm. Check on them. Have a small conversation. Just even in having a small conversation where we don't know where to start or where to begin, it will unfold and we'll begin to have that spiritual connection, mm-hmm. and we'll be able to process through things. But know that your experience is your experience, and mm-hmm. honor that it was difficult. And don't, if you want to feel that and acknowledge that it was not easy for you, then do that. You are within your right to feel how you need to feel about your experience, because it is your experience. I always tell, you know, my children that it does not matter if you are scared of a spider. If you're scared of a spider and your brother is not scared of a spider, that is your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for anybody to say that you're overreacting, which
That's
is a
right.
huge thing. We hear that a lot. Oh, you're just emotional or you're overreacting.
Yeah.
And that's devaluing of us. That's invalidating us as human beings, and I feel so strongly that it's depersonalizing us as human beings. Your story, your experience is valuable because that made an impact on you as a parent, and you're going to hold this experience with you each and every day as you raise your child. And one thing that I realized in my work and my training, because I just walked into this work,
mm-hmm.
but it helped me to realize things about myself as a parent where I didn't recognize before, is that my experiences with my birth story of my children, each and every one of them, is a direct connection to the anxiety I feel around their birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
And I never would have linked it,
mm-hmm.
if I had not started doing this work, that I get this huge amount of anxiety. My second child, she's 16, and I sat her down and I said, you know, it's just, I realized that I have so much anxiety and I want this to be so perfect for you every year.
Yes.
Because when you were born, I didn't go that way.
Mm.
I did not have the birth that I wanted. I didn't have the experience that I wanted. And so I recognize all of that created anxiety around your birthday. It's a part of what our traumas do to us. Our trauma is a whole other subject as well, but also
yes,
connected
yes.
is that it triggers us not just mentally but emotionally and physically as well. If we can have a day and there will be a trigger, we won't recognize it, but our bodies won't feel right.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We'll feel all over the place and we'll wonder why. Well, there was a trigger. There was something that triggered an experience that we've had that created some trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And our bodies remember that.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, and we're going to talk much more after these commercials about how we can have better birthdays, and better parenting experiences. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Talk to your doctor about creating a plan that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees, they pray hard, they pray hard. Ain't never look bad once the world forgave you.
Happy birthday. I know, it might not actually be your birthday, but we're talking about birth. We're talking about birthing people. We're talking about birthdays and all the ways we can make birth better. We have an amazing guest with us to share and to help us understand these things. Would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
Yes, my name is Krista Cole. I'm an Inuit Yupik. I work with Perinatal Support Washington in their Parent Resilience program. I'm also a mother of six.
I'm so happy you're here. I love any chance I get to talk with you. Your wisdom and your compassion and your grace just shine through. You know, the other day I was talking to a group of moms, and we were all talking about what were the biggest enemies to having happy motherhood. And it was interesting because they all agreed on two things: perfectionism, and social media. That we're all in danger of comparing ourselves to, you know who I'm talking about, those great moms on Instagram whose children all have unmatching clothes and are eating perfect meals, and oh my goodness, their haircuts look so cute, and they're just delightful, and they are delightful. We love those people. We love them just like we love all people. But if we're not careful, then we look in the mirror and we see our postpartum hair, we see, you know, our child has one sock on, you know, and we can quickly become, oh no, I'm not a good mom, perfectionism. How do we avoid that kind of, we want to do a good job, we want to be excellent mothers, we want to be great at this, we want our children to have happy childhoods, but how do we avoid condemnation that comes with perfectionism?
Oh, that's one thing is we can acknowledge within ourselves that we're not perfect, and so don't hold the expectation for others to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Also acknowledge that social media, those are pictures. Those are a small piece of those people's lives, and that I'm pretty sure it's not 100%. Glitter and glamour and, you know, cleanliness. Like, we have our struggles. Each one of us has our struggles, and some of us are willing to talk about them, and then others are not. And holding that knowledge that some people we don't talk about their struggles. This morning, I had posted some pictures on my Facebook of my workspace and my car.
Oh.
And in the pictures, in my driver's seat, I had two Ken dolls and a Skipper, and I want to say Barbie, but, you know, if I get it wrong, my daughter will glare at me, but I think it was Skipper and two Ken dolls in my driver's seat. And when I got into my home office, I had horses and Lion King things in front of my computer, and the other picture was my water bottle with random items taped to it. And those are images of imperfections and toys in places they should not be. But it was also a reflection for me of how safe my children feel in expressing that mom's workspace can have the toys in it. That there's no extreme rules that Ken and Skipper can't sit in the driver's seat. And I acknowledge the healthy attachment my children have to me, and they feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
They feel safe in having their toys in these spaces. They're not going to get yelled at. They're not going to, you know, I'm not going to throw the toys across the room, you know, and say, don't leave your toys here. But it was, you know, I can't have this space, but that's okay, because my journey as a parent, they're always in my space. I am a single mom, and this is what I do. I parent them. I raise them. I want them to feel safe and comfortable. But take it back on.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. I love that.
Yeah, it's just acknowledging that we are not perfect, that if we can look at our child in a moment, and I will say that I was not so, I don't feel like I was a mom that I am now 20 years ago.
Hmm.
I had a lot of learning to do. I had a lot of growing to do. I became a mom at 17. And I hold that knowledge that I needed to learn to be better. I had to look at my children and ask myself, who do I want to be to them?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of adults do I want them to be in the world one day? Because I'm not going to stay children forever.
That's right.
And I had a lot of anxiety about keeping my house clean and doing these things, but then I realized that this was coming from being triggered, that had to feel perfect. I had to have this perfection. I don't want my children in a world where we have to see things as perfection, because in life we do have our good days and we do have our bad days, and society does not look at our bad days like something that is normal. And I don't want to be in community and, you know, have my friends feel like I'm so perfect. Like, no, it's not that great. People say, oh, you're such a great mom. And I'm like, yeah, I haven't always been this mom. I parented out of fear for so many years, and it created more hardships on my parenting and my children's development than I imagined, than I knew. And that's a part of why community is so important as well, is that we need each other to learn how to be better versions of ourselves, if we want to be better versions of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's also nothing wrong with feeling like you're exactly where you need to be in your life. But we also want to be able to hold space, especially, you know, in our community group, that we're not perfect and we need that to be okay. That it's okay to not be okay. You know, my daughter's hair used to be braided all the time, and I've had more children since then, and school and work, and, you know, I have psoriatic arthritis, and so my hands don't work as well. I have a daughter, you know, my children have psoriasis, just like I did, and I do. But I remember walking into the grocery store with one of my daughters, who she has alopecia and psoriasis, and she loves wearing her hair out. And I walked into the grocery store, and my children are African-American and indigenous. And a woman walked by, and she said, you know, give me some grease and I'll braid her hair. And I felt so hurt by that. And I felt so judged, because I felt really insecure. You know, like, and my daughter should have her hair done. Like, I should be doing better. But I also had to process, one, my hands don't work that well.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we were just stepping into the grocery store. It was the day we were washing her hair. So I'm like, well, I don't need to, you know, fix your hair if we're just coming home to wash it anyways. Mm-hmm. And she really wanted to go to the grocery store with me. And that was a moment where her and I were spending time together.
That's right.
And that was important to her. And so it took me a lot of processing what that really was. And going back to, you know, social media, is these moments that we see each other in community and these pictures that we see on social media, they are not the whole story. And if we're not stopping and asking questions, you know, we don't know what's really happening. If we don't have conversations, if we don't have non-judgmental safe spaces to talk about things.
That's right. That's right. And see, that's what I love, the non-judgmental safe spaces. We've got to have those. And we've got to have them for ourselves. We've got to be safe spaces for ourselves. We have to show ourselves some mercy and some grace as well along the journey. You know, I am so thankful to be having this kind of conversation, because this is the kind of conversation that heals and makes people happy. And, you know, I think about I want all the children in my life to have a happy childhood. I think we all do. And yet I realize that they're happiest when they're just with me. You know, like, I'm like, oh, now this is what they need. They need this, and this is great, and this is what, you know, And then just like you said, the grocery store, that was enough, you know? And so I don't want us to come under condemnation. You know, we're condemning ourselves for that artificial idea of perfectionism. So let's talk about birth a little bit more. Because right now, I think maybe there are some ways that we can make the experience better for birthing people, even just in all kinds of ways. But what are some of the things that you feel having advocacy like yours can do? I mean, practically speaking.
It can provide growth, emotional, spiritual growth. Is, you know, I sit with parents, and sometimes it's not easy, because it's really hard for me sometimes to connect with people. I have social anxiety, so I'm really surprised that I'm doing this.
And you're so professional. I was just thinking, I was like, you almost need your own show. You need your own podcast.
Oh, thank you. But it's, you know, the work that I do, I feel like has helped. I've seen so many people grow. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I tell one of my participants is, your power is showing, because she didn't, you know, she acknowledged, and I hope she doesn't mind if she hears this, that, you know, I say this, but she said, I don't feel like I am myself, you know, the me that I was this long ago. And I said, honey, your power is showing. I see it every day that I see you. Even though you don't feel like you're okay, your power is still showing. It's always showing.
Mm-hmm.
And she has told me that I've helped her so much. And that's important. Like, I can say that this is who I am. I'm a parent resilience specialist, and this is my job. But I don't know if it's working unless the people I work with tell me that it's working for them. And that's the important piece, is that also acknowledging I'm not perfect. I'm human, and I may not be able to help some people, and I may be able to help others. But this work is holding space for us to be able to talk about how hard it is. I've had a mom I worked with who, and this is a really tough subject, but I also want to make sure that it's not so tough that we can't talk about it, is I had a mom who had an abortion for a baby she wanted because of medical reasons, and she processed how hard this was for her, and that she wanted to do the best for herself, her other child, her husband, and this baby. And this was the best decision that she thought she could make.
Aww.
And I held that space and let her know, even though abortion for me was never an option for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not mean that it's not for somebody else. You know, it just means that I can acknowledge how difficult this decision was.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to hold that space for people and say, I see you. And that's important. That's how we can help our birthing experiences. I see you, and I know how difficult this is. Even if it is where we're in a hospital and we're given no other choice. Like, I had twins. They're 10 now, and because of my two previous C-sections, I had to have a C-section. The doctor also let me know. She was very kind to let me know that one baby was breech anyways. And so it was like, there's no other way.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that, acknowledging, I know that it feels like you don't have a choice, and this is medically necessary, and we've done all the inventory that we can. That's a part of it too, being able to sit with a parent in their birthing experience and say, I know that this is what you wanted,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to look like this. How can I help you process this so that you're okay in this? So that this isn't something that you leave the hospital with your newborn baby and it's causing more harm to your emotional state. What can we do to help you in this situation? Because sometimes there are situations where we cannot have the birth experience that we want. And we need to be seen in that. We need to be heard in that. We need to be honored in that.
Wow. Yes, yes. I think sometimes the first step of love is just to listen. What are you saying? What do you need? What? How can we help you? And I hear you doing that. And so how can we get that kind of help, right? We have folks who listen to us all over the world, so I'm not necessarily being specific, but how can we ask for support, someone to hold space with us, to be with us during this journey, whatever part of it we're in? You know, my doctor said to me that every woman that is a mother is postnatal for the rest of her life. And I had never heard that. I you know, that's right. You know, that's right. I mean, once you've given birth, you are different. There is something different about you for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
But for folks who are birthing people right now, who are moving through the journey right now, what can they say? How can they find? What are some ways that they might be able to get the kind of support that we see is making lives better?
I would say just one, if there's a doula program in your area,
mm-hmm.
reach out to them. Or if you have an auntie or a cousin or someone in your life that you trust, I would say sit down with them and say, I am about to experience a life-changing thing in my life,
mm-hmm.
and I need to be heard. Do you have the capacity to hold me in this and walk with me in this journey, no matter what may come of it? If it doesn't go the way that I expect it, can you hold this space for me and my emotions and my mental well-being so that I have the best outcome possible so that I can be a successful mother, so that I can be better for my baby? Because I'm worried. I'm worried that if things go wrong, what will that do to me? Acknowledge that we are human beings and that birthing experiences are not sterile experiences like,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many of us feel like in the hospitals. You know, be able to acknowledge that this is what I need and I want this. I want this for me. I want this support. Like, I want to be heard and held in this. And I think that turning to people that we can trust, because sometimes we have people in our lives that cannot provide that. I know that I have a really rough relationship with my birth mother, and I don't have that connection with her right now. But I know that she was not the person that I could turn to when I needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I turned to her a few times, and it was just like, well, what do you expect me to do? And I'm like, well, help.
Wow. Okay.
But acknowledging that we do have people in our lives that can give us things in our lives that are beneficial, but they can't help in other areas. Like, we,
mm-hmm.
You know, I have a good friend that would bring coffee, and she was great with her coffee, but her conversation was not that great.
mm-hmm.
Or her support as a friend in other areas of my life was not that great, but she was a really good friend because she'd always show up with coffee. And just knowing who can provide what in your life, knowing that, you know, if you have a partner and they're disconnected, you know, emotionally, but you love them, obviously, you love them so much, but you know that their individual strengths are in this area and they're not so strong in other areas. So I
mm-hmm.
think that's really important, is within ourselves acknowledging that we're human,
mm-hmm.
and so are people in our lives. They're human as well. You know, so I think that's one thing that we can do, looking into our, you know, our doula programs or community support programs, even looking to see if there's peer support somewhere, or perinatal mental health specifically, to where you can feel held. But I know that like doulas and midwives, you know, hold that space in that birthing area when it's time. I know that for me in my area in Washington, in Seattle, Washington specifically, I'm working in community on implementing a program.
Oh.
You know, and I don't know where to start, but I know that we need our ceremonies.
Yeah.
We need space. We need to be held. And we've got a really great doula program. It's the Hummingbird Program. And it's led by Cami Goldhammer, and she's amazing. She is such an amazing person to work with and be in community with. So I know that, you know, there's, I don't know about other areas, there's Open Arms as well. And I know that women of color and people of color specifically are working on becoming doulas and working in these fields more. There was even an article about a man who had become a doula to hold space. And so I think it's really becoming more known that we need these that we need doulas and these programs in our communities.
What a life-changing answer. I mean, what an amazing answer. We don't have much time left, and I'm just so full and so appreciative of everything you're saying, but I want to make sure that I ask you this because you're a champion in this area.
Thank you.
Cycle breakers. Can we break cycles? Maybe you had an abusive mother. Can you not be an abusive mother? How do we break a cycle?
Oh, yeah. I'm a cycle breaker. I will say I'm a cycle breaker. I grew up hearing you're gonna be an alcoholic, drug addict. If it was in your family, it's gonna happen to you. If you were in foster care, your children are gonna be in foster care. You know, these are the things that you hear growing up because of statistics, and they see you as a statistic if you grew up in these areas or with these mm-hmm. these circumstances. And that's not me. My children, I'm raising my four children. My four living children, and they're happy and they're healthy. And I have broken the cycle of addiction. I never had an issue with that. And I think that I'll say that my son, my firstborn, I give him a lot of credit for changing my life and helping me grow. But one of the major things is acknowledging that we have that trauma, acknowledging that we have these experiences, and acknowledging that it was not our fault.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask for these things. These things were given to us as things we didn't want and we didn't need. We didn't need any of this. But we have that intergenerational trauma, and it just gets passed down and passed down. And how we break that cycle is acknowledging it first, that it's there, knowing that, knowing what anxiety looks like, knowing what PTSD looks like, looking at those symptoms and knowing that, oh, maybe I am not doing as well as I thought. And one thing that helped me is I realized that I was parenting out of fear. And when I say parenting out of fear, I had a lot of anxiety, and I had complex PTSD, and I was not diagnosed until I was in my 30s.
Mm.
I went through life being told that I was depressed, and that didn't sit right with me.
Mm.
But that was the thing, is in our mental health care field, that's what they say depression. They don't see anything else. If you say PTSD or you have trauma, because depression is one of the symptoms of PTSD, they automatically just go to depression. And we break cycles by acknowledging this pain and, again, holding space for those real conversations, you know, being able to say, this happened to me and this was not my fault. Sometimes in life, we're going to have people that say that this was your fault and they're going to blame you. And we have to be able to acknowledge it wasn't our fault. If your mom was abusive or toxic, or alcoholic, if you were in foster care, that none of that was your fault.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't do that to yourself.
That's right. That is right. And everything that you're saying is life-changing and brave and courageous. And everything that you're doing is transforming lives. You are truly a great example of transformational leadership, and I'm so honored that you joined us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a beautiful experience, and I'm so honored to be here.
We're glad you were here, and we're glad all of our friends who listen were here too, just in case. I hope someone said it to you today, but in case they haven't, the Creator loves you, and all of us do too. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back once the war forget.
You've got the power, the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com.